Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 77. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com. And tonight, Wednesday night, actually, or Thursday night, I'm sorry, for the Friday show, I have Alex Kozora sitting in for David Todd, who is in New York City. Perfect time to have Alex on the show for the first time in 2018, as he has spent the last 3 days in Mobile, Alabama, covering the Senior Bowl, his third year there. Alex, happy Thursday night.
Happy Thursday night, Dave. There's a Waffle House next to me. You mean to bring you anything?
Oh, Lord, don't tease me like that. Alex, I can tell you stories about Waffle House you wouldn't even believe. I can tell you stories for a full hour you wouldn't even believe.
What story about Waffle House could I not believe?
Jeez, I can
give
tell
me a taste
you
of one. Give me a taste of Waffle House. Right,
they used to call me Detox Dave. at the Waffle House that was close to me. I was out of my house early age, and had a trailer that I shared with a guy. I mean, you want to talk about I think we paid $150 a month rent for this two bedroom one bath trailer. Single wide, you know, and it was a hop, skip, and a jump from a Waffle House, and I was notorious for getting off work and putting things into my body that I probably shouldn't have, and then I would end up at the Waffle House at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and sometimes after being hauled off somewhere else, and they affectionately called me Detox Dave when I walked in the place. Not so bad though, because I met my wife in a Waffle House, that same Waffle House as well too. So hard to believe there, but we could have a whole pod. One day there will be a whole podcast about about stories such as that. But for now, we better probably stick to talking about the Steelers and the Senior Bowl and all. And you know, before we do so, you know, I figured, you know, normally David Todd and I like to recap, you know, things have happened news and notes wise, and we didn't think there'd be too terribly much to talk about this week. That's why there was no show on Wednesday. But lo and behold, the Steelers are down, Steelers are down in Orlando, Florida at the Pro Bowl. Had a feeling that we're going to get a couple of interviews while those guys were down there. That happened. And lo and behold, Le'Veon Bell talked about his contract situation, and I'm not sure if you've had time to read all the quotes, Alex, but in so many words, Le'Veon Bell is making it sound like a long-term contract extension is going to be done before February 20th, which is the starting date for the Steelers to be able to place the franchise tag on him. In a couple of separate interviews here, he's given every indication that he fully expects that to happen. And this just comes on, what, the two to three weeks ago, he's talking about how he might retire, how he might sit out the entire season of the Steelers franchise tag him, and now here he is talking a few weeks later about having a deal done. Are you buying it?
I mean, you know, I'll take positive news. It's better than, like you said, you know, the negative stories about the retirement and will they get a deal done and that kind of drama that came along with it, but I'm not going to really fully buy it. This could just be Bell trying to spin it, trying to get out in front of this, so if a deal doesn't happen, he can say, hey, I put good faith into this, I thought we were close, you know, it didn't work out, that's not on me, you know, maybe I'm being the cynic with that kind of train of thought, but, you know, I know they're closer than last year, but I mean, duh, of course they're closer than last year, that whole offseason last year, try to work through this and get a little bit closer. Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, not contracts, so I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, and for those of you, I know Alex is probably going to cut in and out maybe a few times like he just did there. But you know, please understand that he is in a hotel and he's probably on their Wi-Fi and all like that. So it doesn't sound too bad. But when that does happen, please keep that in mind during this podcast here. Look, you know, I've gone from one end of the spectrum to the other end of the spectrum with Le'Veon Bell. You know, talking middle of the season, I was thinking, I don't know, you know, I don't know if they're going to put the franchise tag on him again. Not sure they're going to be able to work out a long-term deal with him after failing to do so by the July deadline this past season. And then, you know, over the course of the season and all, you know, David Todd was in one direction, I was on the other end, and just recently it seems like the two of us have passed each other on the Bell Highway. I'm coming around more to the thinking of that, you know, either A, they will franchise tag him, and or B, get a long-term deal with him, whereas David is moving the other direction there. I've got to be honest with you. I think I'll be shocked if they get it done by February 20th. But with that said, I'm buying everything Le'Veon Bell's selling right now. I believe him. I think there is something happening with the two sides right now. I think they're wanting to avoid the whole tag situation again. Now, if they get to, you know, obviously, if no deal's going to get done by the March, what is it, 6 or whatever deadline it is to place the tag on him, they're going to have to do so. And in fact, you know, I would be surprised. You know, to me, and I don't want to get way off track here, to me, it would be in Bell's interest, best interest, to at least force the Steelers to put the tag on him and then negotiate from that standpoint. But it sounds like there's been a lot of negotiating or some negotiating going on. And long and short of it, I believe him, Alex. And I think that there's a good chance the deal will get done by February 20th.
If it doesn't get done by then, Dave, when do you think it will get done? Will this thing drag into the summer?
Wow, if you get to the point where he's getting the tag put on him,
mm-hmm.
You know, if you can't get it done by February 20th, what makes you think you're going to get it done by the 6th, you know? Because look, I mean, the start of the new league year is right around the corner. They obviously would like to know if they're going to be able to lower his tag number from $14.54 million down to whatever, you know, which would obviously probably be somewhat lower via a new deal. And I think that's kind of the goal here. You know, if they think that the end result is going to be a new deal, then why not get it done sooner rather than later? You might save a guy a job or two, or might save yourself a restructure or two by doing so. So, I think it's going to get done, Alex. And I'm not sure I would have said that, or I know I wouldn't have said that 4 weeks ago, 5-6 weeks ago, you know. But he seems to be, you know, either his agent has really trained him well on how to spin this thing, which is very possible, or he legitimately thinks it's going to get done. And you know, I've heard a lot of players speak and coach speak, you know, over the years, and I don't know. I believe him.
Yeah, I'm not as convinced as you are right now, Dave. We heard this story last year that they were close in March. It didn't happen, and I just feel like this might be an overcorrection of the bad publicity he got after those, you know, Jeremy Fowler retirement comments came out, and he's trying to put on a good face about it. I think the situation hasn't changed from last year, you know. What Bell wants to get paid, Steelers had their top offer last year. You know, I think that they go with tag and try to work something out, but I'm not as optimistic.
I wonder, part of me wonders, and I hate to roll the whole Ryan Shazier thing into this. You know, the Steelers obviously, prior to Ryan Shazier suffering his spine injury, he was going to be on the books to get an extension done. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there was money that they probably had already budgeted to go to him. With it looking like now that Ryan Shazier's not going to get a long-term deal this offseason. And really, for those of you, it's a topic for another day, but in case those of you are curious, if indeed Ryan Shazier, you know, is unable to participate and at the start of training camp and on into the season, he would obviously be placed on the PUP list, okay? And then if he stayed on that PUP list on into the regular season, then the final year, that final year of his contract would toll anyway. Okay, so then, fingers crossed, let's say he was not able to play during the 2018 season, but he was able to maybe make a full recovery by 2019. Well, then they would have, they could then put him in line to get an extension prior to them. We're ways away off that, and I don't think, part of me wants to think one is separate than the other, but it does kind of make you wonder, did they have this? Because, I mean, let's face it, the only real contract extension I think most of us were counting on happening this offseason, major money, not guys like Chris Boswell or like that, would be Ryan Shazier. And now, with it not looking like that, I wonder if that's freed up the Steelers to maybe be able to shift some money around and maybe, heavily kind of front load, a deal to Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought of that. That's a good point, Dave. I obviously neither side wants a tag. Bell wants the security. Steelers don't want the giant cap number for 1 year when they got some cap stuff to try to figure out. But I think it's just going to be tough to try to find that final number. Bell knows his worth. He's been adamant about his worth, and I don't know if that's money the Steelers are going to pay. So either Bell's got to come down a little bit, or they got to get really creative with his contract.
And with all that I said aside, the Steelers are not going to overpay. Okay,
right.
They are not going to overpay. And the thing is, Bell, I would think that Bell is not going to take less than $15 million a season, and that's just a little bit more than what his franchise tag would be this season. I would not pay him more than $15 million. $15 million, I mean, I've written and talked a lot about Le'Veon Bell, but and a decrease in overall productivity as a whole in 2017, but there is no doubt he's still one of the league's top backs, and he does a lot out of the backfield. And look, his blocking alone, there is no stat for what he does as a blocker, his ability now to play 97-98% of the snaps, mm-hmm. and all like that. Now, was his stats more a result of volume last season? Yes, I think it was. I mean, guys like Todd Gurley and guys like Alvin Kamara were the better backs as a whole last season. But with that said, Bell is still, top 3, 4, 5 back in the league. That's not even debatable. The thing comes now, is he worth nearly double? Or let's see, what is Freeman making now? 12, I forget what Freeman is making here. But I mean, is he worth that 8 point something is what Freeman's making? Is he that mm-hmm. much worth that much more than the next guy on the list there? And geez, I mean, even $15 million a season, that's expensive, right?
Right. Yeah, my question to you, Dave, and just as kind of rhetorical, but what changed from last year to this year that would make him be able to get a deal done? Has Bell's asking price come down? Are the Steelers going to be willing to pay more? I think the answer to both of those is no. Bell's price hasn't changed, and the Steelers' price hasn't changed. So, what makes this year different?
We're going to find out we're going to find out if the deal gets done and once the numbers are out. Because, he supposedly turned down 30 after 2 and 42 after 3, right? So,
Steelers offered more than that? I don't think so.
And now they were prepared. They were prepared to pay him more. Back-to-back tags is still cheaper than what they were going to pay him over the course of the first 2 years of that deal that they offered him, assuming that the report of that deal is true. Now, with inflation and the cap going up and all like that, if they were going to give him, what was it, $14 million? Average over 3 last year, is that what it worked out to? Yeah, $14 million. Mm-hmm. Is $15 million $15 million over 3 unreasonable this year? Probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, if they were willing to do 14 over, for average $14 million over 3 last year, you would think they'd be willing to do 15 over 3 this year, right? Now, here's the thing. I mean, his deal's going to be structured like every other big deal that the Steelers sign out. I mean, the only guaranteed money is going to be in year one, and that's it. You know, so are you going to give him like a $17 million signing bonus? You know, is he going to pocket $18 million in year one? And then, you know, after 2 years, you know, make, I don't know, let's say 30, you know, 35 or $34 million after two, and then 45 after three. That's probably what you're looking at. Now, I can't see him going much higher than that. And, you know, if they, if they think they can get three more years out of him, productive years out, then it's worth doing the deal, because after 3 years, that's when it'll be at least feasible to cut him at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough. It's tricky. I guess, you know, I'm glad it's there's a bit of optimism, you know, surrounding both sides, because there's been a lot of negativity with both sides and contract talk. But, you know, like I said, I think we've heard this story before, and I don't know what's changed to make this year different than last.
Yeah, I'll go. I mean, if 15, 15 and a half a year, that's tops. You know, I think, and boy, do they have to get that running game back going again, because, you know, look, I mean, we all saw it, not good between the tackles last year, right? You know, good outside the tackles, but not in, and he's never been a guy that's broken, you know, that breaks that 20 yard run either. So, all right, we kind of spent enough on that. I want to spend about 10 minutes on that. I think we spent 20. Who is happier about Todd Haley being out and Randy? Who is happier about Todd Haley being out and Randy Feitner being the new offensive coordinator? Ben Roethlisberger, Dave Bryan, or Alex Cazora?
Can I give you the old yes? Can I give you the Dave Bryan yes answer? Probably Ben. Very clearly wanted Randy as the guy. I know Ben's saying all the right things about how much Haley helped him, but Ben would probably had a good chuckle about getting seeing Haley go to the Browns and having Randy as his guy.
I would agree. Ben wins that, but I think you and I might be a close second there. And look, neither one of us hated Todd Haley, right?
I liked Haley. I liked him a lot.
The offense did a lot of good things during Haley's time in Pittsburgh. The problem is, and David and I talked about this the other day, and I wrote about it on Cedars Depot as well too, they're going to have to do something about this red zone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was weird. You know, it's been good. Well, you have the numbers. It was pretty decent the previous 2 years, was it not? Or was it, I forget the numbers. I know this year was terrible, but do you remember previous years under Haley?
Yeah, you know, last year obviously better. But look, I mean, it's never been a huge strength of a Steelers offense since Ben Roethlisberger, you know, arrived in Pittsburgh in 2004. I think they were, what, 60 or 61 a couple of times percent. Boy, we'd kill to hit 60% now, right?
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
But overall, look, I mean, I can remember writing on the site back when Arians retired and you know, they were looking for a new offensive coordinator. Randy Feitner was my number one choice. You know, I know you recently kind of went back over what Randy Feitner did back in Memphis, and I kind of made sure to rebump that article that I did on Randy Feitner. The fact of the matter is, neither one of us think a lot is going to change offensively, at least in year one. Now, Randy Feitner, you know, more than likely he's going to put his stamps on the offense, little things, I think, like you pointed out with using false keys more and getting offensive linemen moving the other direction and the quarterback the other direction, you know, the other way, probably some more play action, hopefully higher usage of switch routes along those lines. But in general, the average fan's probably not going to be able to pick out a lot of the differences, right? At least not initially.
Right. I mean, that's what the players I saw at the Pro Bowl talked about, some different stuff, little formational things. You know, it'll be interesting to see. It's not going to be a carbon copy of Haley. You're going to see some different route combinations. I'm excited to check that out. But, you know, by and large, the average fan's not going to really know or frankly care. You know, big picture stuff, it's about becoming a more efficient offense, because while the Steelers can be potent, they're not always efficient. I'd actually call them probably middle of the pack in terms of that. So that's Randy Feitner's charge. The only other thing I think you might see from Feitner, and this is kind of a guess, but you might see some pistol that'll create the ability to go play action, but get Ben out from under center, because he's not as good there as he used to be. He's better out from the gun. It's a nice blend. I know Mike Munchak wants to run more pistol. Maybe he has a bit more of a sway in this as well. So I think that could be a good kind of blend to create play action, get that downhill run scheme, and still get Ben kind of in a mini shotgun.
What would you do to help this running game, especially on first down? First and 10 runs this year just was absolutely horrible.
That's a really good question. I think I'll have to go back through the summer and check it out. I don't know if it's just not getting a good enough push, if it's individual stuff. I don't know if it's a blocking scheme thing. Do you have any ideas?
I'd like to see a little bit more outside zone run. Now, obviously, they're not going to be a heavy use. You know, they're not going to be the Chicago Bears team that the Steelers faced earlier this year that can really run that outside zone play after play. But I think mixing that in a little bit. I mean, really, how much outside zone do we see since Munchak has arrived?
Right, very little, but I don't know if that's Bell's forte. Now, I think you're going to continue to see a strong perimeter run game, some of those pin-pull stuff they did back half of the year once Juju kind of really got his footing. And, I think he's a big asset and why they had success with that, because he's a guy that can crack the DN because he has that physicality. So maybe he gets just some more perimeter stuff, maybe not outside zone, but the pin-pull kind of concept. The run game as a whole has to get a bit of a jump.
Yeah, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, I mean, outside the tackles were a lot better, runs were a lot better than inside the guard runs this year. And, you can run outside and you don't have to run that toss sweep to do it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Especially on third and one.
fourth and one.
Yeah. Right.
Are you buying that quarter, that not having an audible to a quarterback sneak?
I don't know. I mean, if Ben doesn't have it, he's got to be the only franchise quarterback in the league that doesn't. So unless he's been explicitly told that we're not doing it, I try not to get too worried about that. I think the Steelers issues ran far deeper than QB sneaks, to be honest with you. I got tired of hearing about it.
We're not expecting a lot of change on offense as a whole, period. I mean, outside of Chris Hubbard being gone via free agency and maybe a different backup running back and potentially another backup wide receiver or two, we're going to be dealing with the same personnel on the offensive side of football, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Anything else that we have not hit on news and notes-wise the last couple of days? Anything you want to chime in on some recent news before we get into talking a little bit about the Senior Bowl?
You've been doing the legwork, Dave. I appreciate that. So you would know any stories. I can't think of too much else going on.
No, I don't. I don't think there's too much there. I did put up a post late Thursday night contextualizing the Steelers' 2000 sack production of outside linebacker Bud Dupree. Real quick on Bud Dupree, are you putting the are you giving him? Are you picking up that fifth year option?
Yeah, because like you said, there's no downside to it. If he's not worthy of that when the time comes, you can pull it, and you're fine. So I don't see why you wouldn't.
I think the only thing is, I mean, if it's not a slam dunk decision for you, do you really want to get into a situation like the Jets got into with, say, Quentin Coples last year? Are you going to be so afraid if he doesn't make the jump in 2018? Second half of the season, are you going to get into a situation where you're just pulling him off the field and then really outright benching him, so he doesn't get injured, and that kind of thing? So I'm still leaning to them doing it, to them picking up that fifth year option. But with that said, it would not surprise me if it went either way. On the flip side, there's nobody waiting in the wings right now for 2019. But, I mean, if the guy can't play, the guy can't play, you know.
Yeah, but, I mean, you got to be Jarvis Jones to not get that fifth-year option. And I get Dupree struggles. We've talked about them pretty in-depth. He's not as bad as Jarvis Jones. And I think, again, that shoulder injury had something to do with some of the poor production this year.
You really think the shoulder had something to do with it this year?
I mean, I don't want to make every excuse for that, but what was it, in week 3 against Chicago, Dupree told, I think, Fowler that he couldn't even lift his arm up, so that doesn't get better in a couple weeks, you know what I'm saying? So, again, a lot of issues with Dupree, he's got to do better, I'm not trying to excuse it, but I think that there's an understanding of that context and that he can continue to improve and there's still hope. And he still had 6 sacks, again, contextualizing, I think he did a good job with that. But we're not on Jarvis Jones. Jarvis Jones had 6 sacks in his career. Dupree had that in 1 year.
Yeah, but none of them are high quality.
I
saw
know.
Them.
I know,
yeah,
but
a lot of
facts are facts.
Yeah, they look the same in the stat book. And 56 the Steelers had this year is 56. But as we go back through these again, boy, those six. I hope he got down on his knees, you know, for a couple of those for sure. All right, enough of that. Well, we got plenty of time during the offseason to talk about that. Let's talk about some stuff getting us prepared for the draft. Obviously, the Reese's Senior Bowl taking place in Mobile this week. You were down there. Third year you've been down there. You're a veteran down there in Mobile, if you will, in Mobile, Alabama, too. Wow. You want to talk about having a show? I can tell you stories, but I can tell you hour-long stories about experiences in Mobile, Alabama.
A little Mardi Gras involved in that?
Oh, everything. Concerts. I have helped their underground economy immensely.
Say no more.
All cash, if you know what I mean, throughout the years. But, you know, Mobile's not a bad town as long as you're running around during the daytime, which you were. You had some nice weather down there. Phil really does a great job of putting that thing on, doesn't he?
He's done a fantastic job. He got here, what, I think 2012, and this was a pretty small scene, not a whole lot of media, not a whole lot of coverage, and now it's just this marquee event. The access they give you is fantastic. The transparency they give is fantastic. It's an awesome environment. I love coming down here. It's a great town in Mobile, Alabama, and just so happy from, again, our sponsor, Touring Plants. Got to thank them for supporting us and for the fans who've made some donations as well and all the support and readership. It's been fantastic, as always.
All right, you got a chance, I think the first night or second night or whatnot, you got a chance to do plenty of interviews with the guys. I know you got a couple of them already transcribed. Who all did you get to talk to while you were there?
I can pull up the list if you want. I think I have 11 or 12 in total. We'll see some more of that throughout the week on Depot. Cameron Kelly, the corner safety from San Diego State. Danny Johnson, small school corner from Southern. Mike Kaiser from Virginia. Uchenna Nwosu for the outside linebacker from USC. Ian Thomas, tight end from Indiana. Jamon Moore, who told me he was meeting with the Steelers, receiver, Missouri. Trayvon Henderson from Hawaii. Mike McCray from Michigan. Isaac Yidam, corner from Boston College. Cedric Wilson Jr., Cedric Wilson's dad, or son from Boise State. Garrett Dooley from Wisconsin. And then Mike Gesicki, the tight end from Penn State. So we'll have all that coming up next week or two.
Which one of those that you talked to, while talking to them, did you think, boy, this guy sounds like a Steeler player?
Garrett Dooley, definitely. Wisconsin outside linebacker. And maybe there's some bias there considering T.J. Watt. But a very similar kind of personality. Says a little bit of a quiet guy, but once you get to know him, he kind of opens up. It's the same mentality of just kind of the hard-nosed guy. You know, had him transition position switch as well. He went from inside linebacker to outside 3 years ago, so not as dramatic as T.J. Watt, but still a position switch as well for him. And he had a good week of practice down here, so that seems like a guy the Steelers should again target.
All right, before we get to talking about individual players here in positions, I think you would agree with me that we expect the Steelers to address the inside linebacker position early in this year's draft, possibly a free safety type two, maybe in the first three, four, five rounds, a wide receiver. You know, we don't expect a lot of, you know, offensive players, but I mean, outside of, you know, maybe a tight end. What, you know, if you had to list the top four needs for the Steelers as we sit here today, what would they be?
Inside linebacker, free safety. I think those are pretty common for any Steelers fan. I still want another edge rusher. You can't have too many of those guys. They're tough to find. You got to have your depth, so I put edge. And then probably another receiver, just because we've seen the Steelers' depth get battle tested there last two seasons at receiver. Eli Rogers, you know, he might not even come back now with his ACL. So you don't, you know, you're a little thin there. One injury is going to really stress you. So receivers like corners, you got to have four or five of them because you're playing three on a field. 75% of the time, one injury happens, you got to have next guy up. So probably those four.
Being as how you already hit on Jamon Moore and said that he, you know, had some time with the Steelers. 6'2", 5'8", 209 pounds, 9 2/8 hands, not horrible, you know, not tiny, but maybe you'd like him a little bit bigger than that for a guy his size. 33.5-inch arms, not bad, and 33.5-inch arms and 79 4/8, or 79.5 inch wingspan there. What did you know anything about Jamon Moore ahead of the Senior Bowl, and what did you learn about Jamon Moore at the Senior Bowl?
I did. I watched him a little bit. I think the most impressive thing about Jamon Moore is the run blocking. I know that's kind of a lower priority thing, but a lot of effort, a lot of pride into that. You know, he's got a good effort on his stock blocks. I just like that mentality. Obviously, you saw that similar with a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster. I thought Jamon Moore had a good week down here, not even the best week, but can make some tough catches, has some speed, a little run after catch ability. Just a good guy to talk to. Says he grew up in Texas, played a lot of street ball. You had to be physical, you had to be tough to kind of survive that. So, you know, productive receiver, has good size. Again, physical kind of mindset. So the only guy I talked to that said he had met with the Steelers, talked to him on Tuesday. It's pretty early in the week, and the Steelers notoriously don't interview these guys until later in the week. But a name to file away.
More big than fast. Is he faster than what he's going to time? I mean, I watched him on tape too. Boy, I mean, he's got a good average yard per catch and mm-hmm. A couple of 1,000 yard season, and has a knack for finding the end zone, can stretch the field. How's he going to run at the combine?
Yeah, that's a good question. He's not going to blow anyone away. He's probably going to be middle of the pack, somewhere in the, I'd say, maybe low 4.5s, if I had to guess. You know, I'll watch him a little bit more and try to get a feel for that. But, yeah, you know, played an offense that obviously got him the football. Good quarterback in Drew Locke, so there was production there. Can definitely see, though, why the Steelers have some interest.
Not going to be a spark. You think he's going to be a kind of a sparky guy or no?
Again, I think he's going to test just okay. Nothing. I don't know if he's going to blow you away in any one area, especially some of the other receivers that are out there, but he's not going to do terrible either. Now, the Steelers generally look for the sparky type of guy, so we'll see you know, how it fits. But Juju was not a real spark guy either, if I remember correctly, and it was the physicality and it was the toughness that he had that made the Steelers intrigued, and I think Moore has some similar traits.
All right, while we're talking about wide receivers, I think the Penn State kid, I obviously don't get to see everything you do, but I get to watch the NFL Network and try to thumb through their coverage on a daily basis, tape everything, and then go back and rewatch it at night. Deshaun Hamilton seemed like he had a good couple of days there in Mobile.
He did. You know, he was a shrine game guy. He got the call up, and you know, I'm sure he's tired, but had a good week. Fluid, a really good route runner, a lot of nuance in the stem of his route that can create space at the top. Couple of drop problems, but I think they're minor and not the story to talk about. Story to talk about is how explosive and fluid he is. And again, best receiver is an open one. So I thought Hamilton had a really impressive week down here.
I know you were kind of high on the Wilson kid ahead of the combine. Better taste in your mouth or not as good a taste in your mouth after the Senior Bowl about him?
A little mix of both. He had some good corners he was going against. I'd like him to see him be able to win some of those 50-50 jump balls. He had a couple of plays where he got open and quarterback didn't give him the ball. So I think he's a better route runner than people should give him credit for. Good interview, good guy to talk to. Says his dad doesn't try to put a lot of pressure on him. You know, helps him out with some tips and stuff, but wants him to be his own man, his brother as well. Another guy that's kind of learning the position. He was a quarterback in high school. Ended up playing receiver, going to JUCO for 2 years, 2 years at Boise State. So he's still kind of getting used to college ball, this high-level stuff, and just figuring the game out in general. So I think there's upside there. Again, a big playmaker. May not time the fastest, but the guy wins vertically. Reminds me a little bit of Chris Moore a couple of years ago. He was in Baltimore right now, who didn't time great, but you know, just found ways to win vertically.
Who is the James Washington? There was a lot of hype about him. I've yet to watch really, other than the highlights of him. Alex, did he kind of, you know, the overall feeling that I get is he maybe didn't live up to maybe what people were expecting at the Senior Bowl.
I don't know, Dave. I heard a lot of good things from other people, and I, of course, watching myself, I thought he had a really good week start to finish. One of the more consistent guys down here, adjusted the football in the air well, can make some tough catches, showed himself well as a vertical threat. I only watched a little bit of him before coming down. He was the last guy I looked at. He sticks out. He wears number 28. I wish I knew the story behind that, but I thought he had a really strong week down here.
All right, running backs. Don't want to spend too much time on them, but I think earlier in the week you had one that you thought maybe reminded you a little bit about Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, Kalen Ballage from Arizona State. People might remember him. 7 touchdowns a year ago against Texas Tech. That's kind of his big ticket to fame. But he's a big guy, around, 6'1", 220, with good hands, a good route runner. Didn't get a look at him at protection too well. Running backs are tough to judge down here. There's no tackling in practice. Just kind of thud stuff. So it's hard to know for sure how good these guys are. But I thought Ballage did some nice things, showed some versatility. Darrell Williams I've talked up a good bit as well. Another big guy. Mike Tomlin will definitely use the run demeanor way to describe him, a very downhill kind of guy, nothing east-west with him. But he's got surprisingly soft hands for 230 pounds, constantly away from his body, he's quick to the tuck. I think 22 passes last year at LSU, which is pretty rare for running back, and more than what Geis had, who was the starter there. So I thought Williams is going to do well in a power kind of downhill scheme, a little Garrett Blunt-ish, I think.
Too bad Dallas Goedert got dinged up there early, because I would have liked to seen him make it throughout the week out of South Dakota State. I think people are still a little bit too high on him for a small school kid. I got him, from what I've seen right now, I'm thinking, second, third round type of material right there. Obviously not deep into his tape just yet, but it's a shame he got dinged up. But, a lot of people listening to this podcast are very familiar with Gilsecki out of Penn State.
Yeah, and he had a good week as well, Dave. I thought a nice Thursday practice. He's an explosive guy at the top of his route. I wanted to see that. I didn't know if I really saw that always on tape. Of course, has a big frame, can make some tough catches. So Gilsecki, I thought, did well. Durham Smythe from Notre Dame, I think, is just scream stealer. A guy that spent most of his time in a three-point stance, did the dirty work as a blocker, only, I believe, 15 receptions last year. But when his name's called, he makes tough catches. He's got a good pair of hands, can make him in traffic. Did some pass protection stuff for ND. Steelers are very particular about their tight ends being able to be well-rounded and do some of that grunt work. So I think Durham Smythe might be a good mid-round target for him.
Okay, offensive lineman. The Georgia tackle spent a lot of time at both guard spots. I've watched quite a bit of him, but a little bit undersized. I think right at about high 6'2", maybe 6'3", guy. But that's a guy I think that really turned some heads there in Mobile. As did the kid out of, I don't even know where the damn school is. Hobart?
Humboldt State.
Yeah. Boy, you want to talk that guy. And only, what did he weigh in? 299 or something like
yeah.
that?
Yep.
What's his full name?
Alex Kappa.
Alex Kappa, that's it. Yeah, I watched a boy. You want to talk about throwing people out of the club? this kid was really doing it, and not only some of the pass blocking drills, but the run blocking. And in fact, I saw a couple reps. I think, or at least one against Davenport, just tossing them out of the club. The good thing about the Senior Bowl, Alex, and you'll agree with this, is top seniors from wherever, small school, big school, around the country, invited to this thing, it's a good measuring stick for some of these smaller school kids to see, they got the stigma that they didn't play against anybody. Let's see how they do for 3 or 4 days against guys in the top competition. And Kappa, I think, did that. You like to see him obviously gain put a little bit more meat on him. Not that he really needs to. He looks bigger than his listed weight. But this is a guy that's going to be, I don't know, what, top 2 round, 3 round guy easily, right?
Yeah, I think he's got a good chance. This tackle class is not great. He was as advertised as that nasty, demeanor, play to the whistle, and then a little bit after it. Now, I still have some questions about him in pass protection with his feet and making sure he doesn't open up the gate, but I thought he had a good week overall. And you're right, Dave. You made the larger point about the small school kids. There's a ton of small school kids down here in Mobile. They got kids from D3 even down here from, Dubuque. Know where that is in Division III, but we'll get into that a little bit later. I asked Phil Savage about, what do you look for in a small school kid? What makes them worthy of coming here? And, he just said guys that were overlooked out of high school, late bloomers that didn't really play well until their senior year of high school, and all the big schools passed over him because, you know, how recruiting goes. They get guys junior year to commit. So some guys end up in smaller schools and, you know, just always had a talent. It just took a little while to develop it. So I think Gabbett could be one of those guys. You mentioned the Georgia kid, Isaiah Wynn. Yeah, he's undersized, but has a good base, a lot of functional strength, good hand placement. And I like Nevada's Austin Corbett. Versatile, played tackle, played center, played guard down here. Country strong, has a really good base. You can't move him. That could be a versatile piece the Steelers look for. You know, they prize versatility as much as anything.
What about the kid, I think it's Mason Cole out of Michigan, real versatile kid. Is he more of a day three kind of guy?
Yeah, I didn't see a ton of Cole. The little I saw wasn't super impressive. I'm guessing he's going to be kind of a late day three selection.
Okay, let's see. We've covered pretty much overall. You know, look, we're not going to get deep into the quarterback discussion with Josh Allen and Baker. I mean, you're either on one side. It seems like you're Team Allen or Team Mayfield at this point. But you know what? Overall, from what I saw on the TV, Alex, I thought both of them looked good in practices.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mayfield was definitely better and more consistent. I thought Allen ended the week well. You know, I thought Mayfield just was took care of the football better. I thought Allen forced some stuff. But when both are at the top of their game, you know, they're both fantastic. But for me, I thought Mayfield had the better week.
They're both round one guys, right? They're both top 20 guys, you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that debate's going to go on forever, but they could end up both top five for all I know. They're both going to go first round for sure.
All right, now what everybody's tuning into this podcast for is to hear you talk about inside linebacker prospects, edge prospects, and probably free safety prospects. So I'm not going to go down the names. I'm going to leave it to you to cover what names you think that you want to talk about as far as Steelers related that kind of fit that bill at those three positions.
Yeah, unfortunately, the inside linebacker group was not great to start, and it just got kind of worse as the week went on. Micah Kizer got hurt. Dorian O'Daniel from Clemson's out with a rib injury. So
I watched some tape on that Clemson kid. Boy, he's light. What is he? 212, 220, or something like that.
Yeah, he was listed at 220. He came in at 215. He's even lighter.
Yeah, I mean, what is he? I mean, he's got to be an off the ball guy. But I mean, is he a weak outside? I mean, what is he?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question because he's a heck of an athlete. But I was having this discussion with a buddy of mine, and I said 4-3 Will, and he said maybe kind of a big dime sub package guy. You're gonna get a really good special teamer out of him, and you're gonna find some home for him in sub. But it's hard to find his value. It's gonna be capped, I think, in Pittsburgh. He might not be a great fit.
Okay, about the other inside linebackers there.
Yeah, again, you know, one else that really stuck out consistently, I thought Nick DeLuca did some good things against the run. BYU's Fred Warner's a good athlete. Mike McCray's okay, but just the inside linebacker group was not. The defensive end, kind of the rush backer, again, I talked about Dooley. He's got his pass rush plan. He's not a super athlete. He's kind of the anti-Dupree, but that might be a good thing at this point. I don't even know how to pronounce his name, but the Oakland kid, the Ogbo, has a good first step, a good rip move. He can win the edge. You know, he's undersized at 6'1". I like him. And then to go into the safeties, it's got to start with Trayvon Henderson from Hawaii. Versatile, play near the line of scrimmage, can play single high, good in man coverage. Liked him a ton. Kaiser White from West Virginia as well.
Yeah, the kid from West Virginia, is he probably the most versatile one there that could you know, play both in the box and center field? I watched a little bit of his. I went and tracked down his three interceptions and a few of his passes defense yesterday, I think it was. And an intriguing guy. Would you call him maybe the most versatile safety that was in Mobile this week?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. He kind of played that star position at West Virginia, so he kind of, you know, played everywhere. I put him in the mix. Cameron Kelly from San Diego State as well. You know, spent 3 years at safety, a year at corner, kind of Sean Davis-like. Played both corner and safety this week. He's definitely a safety, but he's got kind of that coverage ability, so I think he's an interesting guy as well.
Now, the kid, Okay, I'm gonna learn, boy. There's always a few of these every year that, oh boy, Dave's gonna have to talk about him quite a bit. He can't even pronounce her name. But I have a feeling we're gonna have a few discussions about the kid out of Oklahoma. 6'1", 3'8", definitely undersized, 243. Is he an edge? I mean, is he a true? You look at his tape. I mean, but he did drop too. You know, in limited tape that I saw, he moved all over. And I'm thinking to myself, is this a guy that can play inside off the ball, or not? He seems more athlete than he does a guy with a true position. But I keep wanting to think, you know. But at that size, I mean, I just don't know. Is he an edge or no?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, he's definitely off ball. He's not going to play defensive end, but is he going to be physical enough out on the perimeter to set that edge and go up against tackles? You know, he's had success. He's got a good first step that Ritmu I mentioned a couple minutes ago. Had a lot of success against Pitts Brian O'Neill today. The question is exactly where does he fit? Is he going to be an every down kind of guy? Can you hold up against the run? I mean, it's a fair question. There's definitely some concern there.
Is his athleticism there? I mean, is he a guy that's going to test really well at the combine?
Yeah, I think he'll test great. He's got a great get off. I think his 10 split's going to be fantastic. I think he's going to hit those marks. It's going to say he's a really good athlete. Again, I think it's a question of, you know, can he hold the point of attack? Can he set the edge against the run? That's going to decide whether or not he can play as a 3-4 edge rusher.
Did it ever cross your mind that might be a guy that could be a candidate to move inside or no?
Not really, but it's a good point. You know, you're right. What do you do with him? If he's not physical enough to play the edge, can he play inside? I mean, he's got the hand use. He can get off blocks. He can stay clean. It's just, can he hold the point of attack when you're 6'1", 247? Not everyone's going to be James Harrison. So, you know, maybe he's a sub-package rusher only. That'll hurt his value. Somebody gives him a home. That's an excellent question.
Now, I'm not going to make any type of comparison to Shazier, obviously, here. But, you know, weren't we kind of having discussions about Shazier in his Ohio State tape about what's this guy going to do in the NFL?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, it's a fair question. You know, Shazier obviously was able to overcome that with technique and staying on his feet. I look forward to the Ogbo to safety comments now that you're going to flood
him. Oh, Lord. Yeah, I'm not going there, but I just, I haven't even scratched his tape. I mean, but the more I watched him and the more I saw how he moved around and the more I thought, well, this guy is definitely not a true 4-3 base defensive end. Right. You know, you kind of wonder, you know, is he that kind of guy that can hold the point of attack as a 3-4 outside linebacker? And I kind of was shaking my head kind of no there, but he is athletic. I put you this way. He's a guy I got starred to, A, watch more tape, and, B, I'm really interested to see what he does at the combine there. So I guess overall what you're telling me is, you know, real quick, I think you would agree, too, that the Steelers will probably end up taking a nose tackle maybe day three at some point, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're going to move on from Daniel McCullers. It's just, how do you replace the position? Do you go free agency with something on the cheap? You know, that could be an option. You'll find someone, you know, vet minimum probably there. Or do you go developmental? That, you know, but I think both are possibilities.
Any large defensive tackles stick out?
Not a lot, but, you know, these guys are getting smaller and smaller. You know, the traditional nose tackle obviously is going away. The heaviest guy here is 340 as a guard. The next heaviest guy is like 327. I mean, Puna Ford from Texas is a little fire hydrant. He's probably going to go higher than what the Steelers want. A guy that has good hand use. Questions about his motor and consistency. Might be the only guy on the list I'd really talk to you about, though.
Okay, Davenport. Talk to me about Davenport. Really looked like he went from the part of practice they showed on NFL Network. Man, it looked like he was just all over the place these last couple of days.
Yeah, you know, it's a weird thing, Dave. I kind of, and I'm not the first to do it, but a lot of people are talking about Davenport like Cooper Kupp last year. National media loves him, talked him up all week about how well he did, and it's true, Davenport did well in certain reps, and today was a good day, Thursday I'm talking about, but a lot of inconsistency. I don't see top 15 pick with his pad level, his hot and cold motor, playing the run. His initial punch can be, you know, infrequent. His hands are all over the place. So I didn't see a guy that said this is a top 15 pick. When he's good, but there's too much bad there to say that he's a guy that I'm going to put everything I have into a, you know, a top 15 selection.
Is this the type of kid that's just an example of a small school kid finally getting exposed more on a national stage, or is it just some of the things that he was just that good of an athlete in that small school that a lot of these inconsistencies just didn't show up because he basically was just a better athlete, better player than most people that he faced? Is the trip to the Senior Bowl what is exposing him the most?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Maybe that is some of it, because he's a great athlete and he's able to dominate some of these lower level guys. Maybe he's not used to the conditioning level because he was at a smaller school. You know, those are all valid points. I don't want to make too many excuses for him, though, because if we're talking top 15, there shouldn't be excuses made. I'll tell you this, Joe. I'm going to go Babe Ruth on you, Dave. I'm calling my shot now. Marcus Davenport is going to end up as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. I know the Bucs like him a lot from what I heard from scouts that were sitting behind me talking too loud. So I think Davenport is going to be a Buccaneer.
Oh, there you go. When do they pick first round?
I'm not sure. Top 10? Are they in the top 10?
So you don't think he's a top 15, 20 guy, but you could see him going to the Buccaneers first round then?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just from this week alone, I didn't think he showed he was a top 15 guy. Obviously, there's a lot broader area of work. We have the combine. I'm sure he's going to do very well at the combine. Good personality. He's kind of a weird dude. That's what one scout said. But I know Tampa Bay likes him, and, you know, I think they're going to go after him.
Daniel Jeremiah tried to put a perfect fit for him with the Steelers at 28 overall.
he said that.
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
On the wrap up show, I think tonight they were saying perfect fits or whatnot. I think Jeremiah said he would love to see Davenport in Pittsburgh in the first round there as an edge.
I asked Davenport about him dropping into coverage, and he kind of looked at me funny. So I don't know if he likes the idea too much. Might want to tell him he's dropping 30% of the time. I don't know if that's going to be his thing.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing that we learned last year, I think, in the draft. Who was the kid out of Kansas State?
Jordan Willis.
Right. I mean, the guy can get out and look like he could get after the passer, but the one thing that he did not do a lot of was drop. And, I remember we had the, you and I had the pro day highlights going through wondering if we could see anybody. You know, I think there was one scout there, but it was really just kind of more of a regional scout, I think, there. And, you know, I was a little bit surprised that, but I think that was the same day, though. I think the Kansas State Pro Day was the same day that they had Dante Hightower in town, if memory serves me and all. But I mean, plain and simple, if you're not a kind of a sparky dude with the combine measurables, and you didn't drop, if you didn't play on your feet a lot in college, then probably no chance the Steelers are going to look at you as an edge, especially early round.
And he is 6'6", so that's tough for one of those guys to try to, you know, go backwards like that.
Yeah, that's true. Overall, Alex, it doesn't sound like, you know, as far as Steelers' needs, immediate needs goes, it doesn't sound like there was a lot of fits down there.
Yeah, I mean, inside linebacker, there's not a lot. Safety, I thought, had a good bit. Trayvon Henderson, I'd like him to come to Pittsburgh. Some of the edge guys have some intrigue there. You know, we'll see. They got three guys from the Senior Bowl last year. You never know what happens. Some later-round guys that could end up being just on a talent basis. But Steelers, although the coaching staff was not down here, I counted, I think, 12 guys in total, including Kevin Colbert, scouts in attendance. And I think I saw the names for most of them. So I was happy to be able to see that kind of buzzed around the Steelers scouts a little bit and just watch those guys go to work.
All right, who was the best athlete there?
Just pure athlete, you mean? Not in terms of kind of best player overall?
Right.
I mean, you know, Davenport's still going to be up there because he is a really good athlete. Shaquem Griffin, we didn't talk about him yet.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. And that kid, boy, you want to talk about just effort alone, and the guy, mm-hmm. the kid comes off and really smart, but you just, you know, at what point, I mean, let's just put it out, can you get past the hand?
Yeah, and for those that don't know, Shaquem Griffin was born without a left hand, or not born without a left hand, I should say. He had a medical condition in his hand, I guess was amputated at 4 years old, so only has one hand. I mean, he's a really good athlete, change of direction is great. Dave, he was around so many plays this week where he was really close to being able to finish it. He just couldn't, and part of that was obviously because of the hand limitation. A great guy to interview, great guy to talk to. I had the article I posted on Steelers Depot. It just, it goes back. What do you do with him? What is he? Is he an edge guy? I mean, they put him at the edge. You put him inside. They even had some reps at safety. I don't know what you do with him.
He got to the quarterback a few times in some of the drills.
Yeah.
I mean, around the edge. I think around the Kappa, around Kappa one time, and I forget who else he beat around the edge on kind of them team drills that they did. But I mean,
can he finish though? Can he finish?
Yeah,
the play?
Can he finish? And can, you know, if he's second level, is he going to be able to ward off those, you know, get through the trash, as they like to say? Somebody's going to draft him, right? I mean, is he really going to go undrafted? I mean, there's something.
No, I think someone takes him just for special teams value alone. I just don't know what the ceiling is beyond that.
Okay, definitely a kid. And boy, you know, I really loved his. I loved his brother's tape. And had really hoped that the Steelers would have taken him at some point during the draft last year. He obviously ended up with the Seahawks and all. What else was I going to ask you here? Normally, you come back from these things and you're in love with somebody. And it doesn't sound like you're in love with somebody this year.
Yeah, you know, it was a really good group to start. A lot of guys dropped out, whether because of injury or just declining the invite. You know, I would have loved to see that Rashawn Evans from Alabama, a good inside linebacker who originally accepted and then declined for whatever reason. Hamilton again, Penn State, I liked a lot. But, yeah, probably not the guy that I love.
Who's the guy that you most can't wait to get back home and get on the tape with?
I mean, I'm a pretty big fan of Garrett Dooley, and I watched him a good bit before coming down here, and I think he kind of confirmed a lot of what I saw. Justin Jones, I don't know if he's going to be a fit for Pittsburgh, but just a big, violent defensive tackle from NC State. He's got a great punch, a really strong bull rush. I liked him a good bit this week.
Okay, and who did you go into this thing this weekend with thinking, okay, can't wait to see this guy that really disappointed you?
Well, one name I wanted to check out, I don't know if he made plays, if I just didn't see him or what, but Jeremy Reeves from South Alabama, who could play corner, could play safety, I heard a lot of good things about him. I just didn't see him do anything this week, and I tried to watch him, tried to find him, just didn't seem to make an impact. So always worried about when those little kind of smaller school guys are a little quiet on a big stage like this. So that's a guy I had high hopes for, just didn't seem to really produce.
How many do you think first-rounders were there?
Oh, man, that is a good question. I mean, Davenport's still going to be viewed as that. What's that? Go ahead.
8 to 10? Or?
No, I don't think it's going to be that high. I don't think it's top-heavy. You know, Mayfield, Allen, Davenport, there's three. I don't know where else you're going to get it from, to be honest with you. You know, we'll see how this process goes, but maybe you might only get 4 to 5 this year.
Wow. Not as talented a group this time around?
Yeah, I think there's good depth. I just don't know if it's as top-heavy as years past. But again, a ton of guys, you know, dropped out, whether injury. Again, Evans, Harold Landry, guys like Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, they declined invites. So you had a lot of guys that had a chance to come down here and work that just declined the offer or injury happened. That probably watered things down pretty well this year.
Yeah, I tell you, after watching every, you know, I obviously want to dig into the Davenport tape. I think he's an intriguing kid. I'm not sure how hard that's going to be able to find his stuff. Being as how he's top rated, I'm sure that stuff will jump up here pretty quick here. And also, I think the kid out of Oklahoma off the edge, to try to determine is. You know, is this guy going to be the sparky guy that you just try to find a place to play him and all? Did you get a chance to talk to him?
I did not, unfortunately.
Okay, and then the USC kid, he's not in this group, is he?
No. Wait, in which group?
In
WOSU, I know you're talking about it. What's the question about him, though?
Yeah, in WOSU, that's who I was talking about. He's a true edge, right?
You know what's weird? I didn't ask him the question, but I was at the podium when he was asked, and he said, you know, someone said, are you a 3-4 guy or a 4-3 guy? He said he was more comfortable in a 4-3. I know one guy, a friend of mine, says he's not an edge guy. I don't know. I think he can be. We'll see.
I don't think he's a 4-3 base edge. Not what I mean. Obviously, I'm just scratching this. I'm like, you know, scratching the surface. Boy, I got so much. You know,
you're a busy man.
You know this time of year. You know, right when the season stops, And then, it came a week earlier than I thought, at least 1 week earlier than I thought it would this year. And then you're scrambling because, man, look, we both watch college football year round, but we don't have the time to dedicate to scouting right. these guys. And now the Senior Bowl comes around. I spend a week trying to watch as many kind of highlight, obviously you don't have time to watch three games on these kids, but you try to take these big names that you see or guys that you think will fit through the system, and you try to watch a quick, highlight, tape of theirs, just to get a kind of feel for them. And I did so much of that, almost too much of it, that some of these guys are already there. Their names are running, together with me. But the Iwasu kid out of USC, I think is going to be high on my list to start with. Jamon Moore, I want to watch obviously more of him. I watched his highlights and got a post up on him for a couple of games right after you had passed along the word to the Steelers to talk to him. Trey Williams, another kid. Is that an interesting kid or no?
The Auburn safety, is that you talking about?
Is he a safety? Is he a linebacker? What is he?
Well, yeah, I mean, he kind of played down in the box, and that's gonna be his role, I think, in the next level. Again, I think it's just limited athlete. You're seeing special teams, but I think his ceiling is gonna be capped.
All right, and as I mentioned, the kid out of Oklahoma, I want to watch too. What about the kid Justin Jones out of North Carolina State? I meant to ask you about him. 6'2", 3'8", 3'11".
Yeah, I like both North Carolina State guys, B.J. Hill and Justin Jones. I thought had good weeks. Justin Jones has a really good punch, violent hands, a good bull rush, and a better athlete than people give him credit for. So I didn't know much about him coming into this week, but I thought he had an excellent week, and he's on my top five winners list.
All right, and I guess you'll have winners and losers up tomorrow or the day after?
Yep, it's staring at the article now. It's ready to go. It'll be up when I'm wheels up tomorrow morning.
All right, and you'll be flying out of Mobile, if you will, tomorrow morning, and then back sometime Saturday afternoon, I suppose. And any kind of final thoughts? Anything you learned? Anything you learned in particular? About this through this whole process that maybe you didn't know before? Any kind of closing thoughts on this year's Senior Bowl?
I just think it's interesting to watch all the small school kids compete. I know the Steelers usually don't dip there, where they do it's on the defensive side of the ball, but that's how they help find Javon Hargrave. I'm convinced that Javon Hargrave got drafted by the Steelers because of what he did at the Shrine Game and what he did down here at the Senior Bowl. So there's a ton of them down here. Some guys got hurt, unfortunately. Nathan Shepard, the D-tackle from Fort Hays State, broke his hand. He's not going to need surgery, so that's good, but he was dominant down here. Some of the other small school kids, corner, Teron Johnson from Weber State, that D3 kid I mentioned earlier, Michael Joseph, he'll take his lumps, but he's highly competitive. I was a big fan of him down here this week. Brandon Parker from North Carolina, A&T, has got good size. You mentioned Kappa. There's a lot of small school talent down here. A lot of guys getting big time exposure. Not many guys that the moment was too big for, and they completely struggled. So I thought that was a really unique kind of twist on this year's Senior Bowl.
All right, you and I are going to start spending a lot more time on these things here moving forward. And, as soon as you get back, starting next week, Sunday or Monday, I suppose we're going to start rolling out our annual draft profiles. 150 to 200, hopefully, again, along those lines. So we'll get those started for listeners out there as well. I know I put it out there on Twitter to take a few questions here, but we only got a few of them here, plus Alex is tired, and we're recording this on a Thursday night, so I think we'll just call it. We'll try to get to some of these questions in a future show here, Alex. So appreciate your time down there. I know it's good to get out of the house a little bit, but it's not really a vacation on top of. But I appreciate your hard work. I look forward to reading more of your stuff, kind of wrapping things up over the course of the next few days at the Senior Bowl. So I definitely appreciate that, and I know our listeners do as well too. Folks, as always, you can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kozora. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Once again, thanks to our sponsor Touring Plans. Alex, give them one quick plug there.
Yeah, Touring Plans have been awesome. They've been sponsoring us now for, what, 3 or 4 years now. Len and the gang's fantastic. You know, they're heavily involved in Disney stuff. If you're booking a trip to Disney, getting out of that Pittsburgh weather, definitely look them up, touringplans.com. They'll take care of you. They do a fantastic job with this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. If you're going to book a trip, book it through them, folks. Please do. And you know, hit them up on Twitter and let Lynn know that you heard about them and all on the via either Steeler's Depot or the Terrible Podcast. We certainly would appreciate it. As I mentioned, follow us on Twitter at Terrible Podcast. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button upper right navigational bar. Alex, I look forward to several more of these throughout the the spring, you know, on into draft time there and into the summer as well. Draft season is here, and until Monday when David Todd should be back with me, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.